Hey, so we were talking about the Tony Robbins event, UPW, Unleash the Power Within. Yes. So I went to that, and then I also went to a business seminar. I also used one of his coaches, who's been a great person who I'm still talking to every couple weeks. So I have spent some money with Tony Robbins, there's no doubt about it, but I think that his stuff is very transformative. I was really concerned and got into a little bit of a Facebook scuffle because some people were thrashing him over the way he had treated one of his guests, and they were right, he treated her awfully over the Me Too movement, but they didn't seem willing to take his apology over it. And I said, well, you have to wait and see. I mean, you know, one of the things I noticed being at the event is that women come out of it so empowered. And it would be crazy for him to do anything that would, somehow push away that very important group for him. So I think he's done the right thing. I guess the future will wait and see how it is. But but I know a lot of people dislike him and a lot of people love him. So to each his own. Yeah. But I do think that it's to be in a growth mindset. I think it's very often you need motivators. You need someone or something that helps pick you up.
I strongly believe that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really think that it's difficult to do it on your own. You need to constantly re-energize yourself, and even the ones that are the energizers. And now I am for my staff and for other people who listen to me over YouTube and this kind of thing. I need to be refilled up. You know, I need to be able to experience that. And it's important to challenge yourself to take it to the next level. Really, how can I take it to the next level? What can I do to really ramp up the thing that we're already doing? And if things are moving this quickly, you know, the reinvention is really something fantastic, actually. I think that the reinvention of ourselves, of our companies, of who we are, allows us to keep up with the current reality. The current reality, I think, is really important. I don't think it's a good thing to just say, I'm not going to go on any social media. And it's a bad thing for people to say, I'm going to reject this thing or that other thing because it's not me. When the majority of your industry is moving that way, I think that it's really important to stay current, to stay involved, and to be bold. You got to be bold. And sometimes you got to start things that you really don't know how to do. I think in hairdressing, we say to a lot of our trainees, you got to fake it till you make it, you know. And I think that there is a lot of that. You know, you have to say, we're moving forward. I don't understand this technology, but I'm going to dive in and see what I can do. And when I get really locked up, maybe I can get some help or I can somehow push through, which is kind of what I'm experiencing right now. And you are too, I think. With some of the technologies that we're being pushed in front of, considering the podcasting. And, it's not always as simple as you think. There's some barriers you have to get through. And when you get through those, number one, it makes you feel great. And you think, you know what, this is possible. It's possible to not be illiterate about technology. It's not just for kids, and it's not just for people who are so inclined. All of us can utilize the technology. It's being built for people who don't know computer languages now. So there's a lot we can do. You just have to work through it and not be afraid.
We just have to do it, but because that's also the way our kids learn it. They mm-hmm. just do it and they learn it. So that's the only way. So, Tony, you know, when you really want to say yes to something, anything, Mm-hmm. You first must be able to say no, to give. Also, sometimes you need to be able to give a firm no. What have you become better at saying no to?
I have been better at saying no to the things which I know someone else can handle. You know, I always wanted to grow the company to a larger size. And I think what it means is that you have to be able to say yes first. So, you know, in the beginning, I handled all the training. I did all the technical training when we first started. And then I felt that there was people that were working for us who could handle some of the training. So I said, yeah, you come into it and you take it on. And then there was a point where they were saying, oh, I have to go do this and that. You do it. And I said, no, you need to find someone to take on that class that you can't teach. And that's literally what has occurred. So sometimes we get this, you know, you get a client on the phone who is unhappy. I could take that call and then not make a decision about an important marketing thing, right? Or I could take that call, but I've got a girl who's assigned to take that call. Yeah. So should I take it and not have her do it? Yeah. Even though no one likes taking those calls?
Yes.
So my thought is you have to say no to the things that you know you really can't, that really shouldn't be your responsibility as you're growing in the company. There's certain things you have to do. Sometimes you really do have to do them. But, you know, I shouldn't have to be doing performance reviews, for instance, with every single person. Now, pay reviews, yes, I do those. I do performance reviews that are spaced out maybe every 3 months or 6 months or a year. But the responsibility of performance reviews in our company falls on the front desk. Now, if they don't do them, then I have to have a conversation with them to do them. But my responsibility is to make sure that person who should be doing them is doing them, not that I should go ahead and jump over her head and I should do them. So it's important to say no to the things that really should be delegated and say yes to the things that that really no one else can do. That's usually what I do as well. What I really do is I usually step into the breach. It's kind of a natural thing that I've been doing all these years. Yeah. Like right now, this whole podcasting thing and really focusing in on creating this next level company of training people in soft skills. Really, no one else was in the position to be able to do that. Now, people were in a position where they're doing technical skill training. Some people are in a position where they're taking over the soft skills training. What they're doing every day. There's lots of people who are able to run the salon every day. There's those people. But when there's something like an unusual, there's people who are doing fashion shows. They're stepping into the breach on that. I don't do that. They do that. Fashion shows, photo shoots, those kinds of things. There's people who are doing that. They love that. That's what they do. That's what they came into this business to do. But who is doing the overall marketing for the company? Nobody. I have to step in to do that. Who's doing the actual budgeting and making decisions on raises and all those other things? Nobody. I have to be able to do that, all the budgeting. So that's kind of where we are at until someone else emerges, and I have a feeling I know who that is, but until other people emerge who can help take on some of those more macro duties, those C-suite duties, I'm in this role. And until I figure out where there's nothing else for me to do, I guess then I'll just go on vacation.
Yeah, that's a good one also. But of course, it's like an evolution, because what you're describing is an evolution. So you create, yes, a system, you create a system, you work in a system, you grow, your people grow, and the system changes. So you constantly have to adapt the system. And that is your growing curve, I think.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you see it?
That's how I see it. Yeah, I think it is how I see it. And I think that if the market could comply, the company could be vastly, vastly larger. But it's challenging at every step. Every time you add another location, every time you add another entity, it becomes that much more challenging. And to do something that would be, let's say, in a remote location, like out of state or downstate or something like that, it would be a whole new ball game then. And then you're talking about growing the team even larger and larger and larger. And, I think that there's some point where you say, is there an exit strategy or something like that? And I don't think necessarily you do need an exit strategy if you have great teams in place. You know, they may need a piece of the action or something like that. But the great teams exist, then you're fine. You have to train your team. You need to create the team.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to come to. I think I don't know how you feel about it, that if you want a great team, you have to create it yourself, and you constantly have to build on it.
No? Yeah, I agree. And you know what we're doing is we're taking a lot of people who aren't necessarily leaders, and they were just like people that were the most conscientious. They might have been leaders in the back of their mind, but I think there's a lot of people that aren't trained as leaders. We have one leader who actually was trained by Starbucks, and she's a great leader. But the majority of people, and even in her case, I would venture to bet that the leaders are people who are just really conscientious people, recognize what's going on with them. They have some natural leadership abilities, like some of them are moms, some of them are drill sergeants, some of them, you know, they all come from leadership from a different perspective. Yeah. You know, we have an overall leadership methodology in the company. But I think it's important for all of us to learn more about leadership. And I think leadership has trends and philosophies in it as well. Not everything always works for every employee, for every situation. You know, you have to be adaptable and your situation. So I think you have leadership. Kim Hansen, who I just had a great conversation with, she makes the distinction between leadership and management. And I like to define the difference between the two as leadership is somewhat of having a vision. And you direct people towards and articulate that vision, and you lead them to it. And then you start to create systems and people who can manage those systems towards that vision, whatever that vision is. Now, I think managers are leaders too, even though managers are just simply usually maintaining the status quo, they are still very much leaders. I think I have people who are brand new. They started yesterday and they're acting like leaders. Okay. There's people who lead at every single phase of the company. You know, the front desk in a salon, even though sometimes it's run by high school kids, that is in its very nature a leadership role. It is like being at the head of the train. You are like the engineer in a locomotive, you know, and you have to be able to direct the client properly. And you have to be able to direct the staff member and the client to come together so that the service provider can take over that client and then execute whatever service they're assigned to do or that the client wants. And then the client has to come back to the front and needs to be led through the checkout process. And then that includes making their next reservation, buying some additional take-home products. And so there is leadership at every single phase of the company, even for beginners, even for the most beginners. You know, you need to guide that head into the shampoo bowl so it doesn't slam against the side of the shampoo bowl. That guiding is fundamentally some form of management, some form of leadership. Everybody needs to take responsibility for that in a company. And I believe it starts really, really early. You have to take responsibility for whatever is going on. Yeah. And so that's pretty much my roundabout way of saying that we do have systems, and we also change. So if I'm always reading books, and if I'm reading a book about leadership, or I feel like the leadership is lacking somehow, I will go find a book or a group of books on that subject. I will leaf through them all, start to read the one that's the most pertinent. If I find it the most pertinent, I will have everybody read it. And when everybody reads it, then they get this inkling of what it means to be in a leadership role. But we have some basic things for leadership, you know, like you should walk the talk, you know, you should dress the part. I think dressing the part is so important in all companies, not just fashion oriented companies.
It's a first impression.
You know, you should lead by, if someone needs to be reprimanded, they should be done in private. Praise should be done in public. You know, so you can lead by all those different ways. It really comes down to that. We need to walk people through as much as you got to hold their hands until they're really ready to be walking alone, until they say, I got this, don't worry about it, I got this, and they don't want you to hold their hand anymore, then you're good. You got to figure out when that is exactly. You know, you get that when they rip their hands away, yes, or they say, you know, okay, got it, it's enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Bernie, can you tell us already a little bit more of your program you're going to bring out, or is it too soon? Can you tell us a little bit? Can you leave
the veil? Yeah, Ismail. So here's the thing that, you know, there's all these people who are in beauty school and they're struggling hairdressers and they have a problem. The problem is that they want to become fully blown hairdressers. That's so true. Some of them need to get out of school, pass the licensing, and then they need to figure out which salon to work at. They need to figure out how to get on their floor and be successful. And then once they get on their floor, how to gain clientele and how to be successful and make more money so that they can eat and survive and buy a house and live their life, right? And be able to do something creative with their life. The problem is, like I said before, only 5% of people are actually successful doing this. And I believe that the reason is because there's not enough focus on all the other things other than technical skills, that we focus an enormous amount of time on technical skills and we don't focus in on all of the other things. And that includes where to work, what to wear, how to do consultations, how to talk to the client, how to sell retail, all these different aspects, how to move from one client to the next. All those different like soft skill things, just attitude and staying current is really, I think, the reason why we have such huge fallout. And so I have the solution. I have a program which will teach that and also keep people accountable to their original intent. So it is really modeled after the course that we're going through right now. It has an accountability doc. Yeah. It has videos that have to be watched. Yeah. It has weekly meetings that are done over probably Zoom. It will have individual coaches that are senior people who've been hairdressers for a while and know how to do it. They've been successful. And you can get on, you know, can you imagine a beauty school student having the ability to get on the phone with a master stylist and be able to fix that? And people can get into my program and guarantee their success. Or they could take their own risks and possibly lose their money, their time, and their hairdresser dreams. So it's kind of like they can do one or the other.
Okay, nice. Very, very nice, very strong. So, Tony, if you look back from a higher level, what are your most valuable lessons you learned till now?
Mm. I think some of the most valuable lessons I ever learned was from my hairdresser father in regard to being in hair. One of the best lessons I ever learned from him was work on the rich. So you have to work on the people that can pay the check. And the problem in the world right now is that honestly, although the economy in the world is okay right now, it's good. It's probably at the top of a cycle. And when the economy falls apart, some people will still get their hair done no matter what.
Yeah.
When the economy falls apart, certain people will continue to get their hair done. And usually the people with no money concerns will continue to get their hair done just like they always have, no matter what the economy's doing, because that's their most important thing. And money's not a concern. You know, eating is not a concern for those people. So, so it doesn't matter if I get a $50 haircut or a $200 haircut. It doesn't matter. So that's one of the best bits of advice I think that I've ever gotten. And I got that from my father, which I thought was very wise, you know. I think that the other bit of advice, I think that he alluded to but never said outright, is that you need to be close to the action to really see what's missing.
Yeah.
So,
you have to live it. You have to experience it.
Right. It's one of those things, like if you were doing a style and you had a hairpin or something and you say, wouldn't it be nice if this hairpin was shaped a different way? It would hold this hair exactly the way I want. It's almost like an engineering thing. Yep. It's like you get into the depths of something and then you say, wow, I wish I had a tool that did just exactly this. And, you know, you could get somebody to make it for you, or you could go make it yourself. You know, it's like, and suddenly that's an innovation. You know, that's an innovation. Suddenly everybody wants it. And now this new style is invented because you can only do it with that kind of hairpin. And I think that happens in all sorts of things, like engineering. You know, like people like Elon Musk, like you wouldn't know that you could actually send and retrieve these rockets the way he does, unless, you know, like SpaceX does, unless you went and tried it, right? And you have to go out there and you have to like try, you have to be so close to that action, you have to fail a bunch that you actually see what needs to be accomplished. So you need to get close to the action to see what's missing. Right, you can do a beta test, but only till you close.
Okay, so I wanted to end this interview with what advice you would give young and driven hairdressing entrepreneurs nowadays.
I'm getting a reverb. Do you hear that?
It's over now. It's okay.
Okay. So what I would say is that you have to look hard. I would say if you are a stylist who's, let's say, looking to open a location, or you're a stylist who's looking to start their own product line, I would look really, really hard before you pull the trigger on like signing a lease or building a product line. You need to take it to the nth degree. And let's say you have a deadline. I get the deadline. You need to work it as hard as possible, right up to the edge of that deadline. I think there's a lot, especially in leases, in locations. This is another reason why a lot of salons fail. They're just simply in the wrong spot. I've made this mistake myself. I literally, if you're 10 feet the wrong direction, it could be the wrong spot. You know, if you're on this side of a corner, it's good. If you're on the other side of the corner, forget it. The place fails, you know. And you have to be really open to that probability that a lot of stuff fails because it hasn't been worked long enough. You know, one of the situations too is that your business will morph. You got to be open to that idea that the business can morph. Like, you know, the guy who started Airbnb, he didn't start renting rooms. That was a fluke that they did that. You know, they morphed the business. They were actually in like a graphics business. They were artists, you know, arts and design. That's what they were doing. Yep, and yep. And all of a sudden it morphed into this like online site of, you know, finding rooms for people in various cities and towns. Yep. You know, so you never know where these things come from. And you have to be able to, yes, have your vision, but also be flexible enough to see the writing on the wall. You know, what if your podcast suddenly people are really interested in one aspect of it? I just had somebody send me a message saying they really loved it when I was talking to people rather than me just pontificating. And so maybe that's what I should be doing all the time. We'll have to see. So we'll see what that looks like in the long run. But I just really think that people should hesitate to pull the trigger. Making an emotional decision is really a bad move. I like to say, I'm looking at, like, for instance, in my last location, I'm looking at this location. Does it fit all the demographics that I need? Is the rent in line? Oh, okay, those are good. Now, can I put a salon there? Oh, good. The legal issues are there, so I can put a salon there. Oh, is the lease work? Do I have the money to do this? Is the landlord an asshole? Should I not get involved with these people whatsoever? You know, what are the things? And let it be a process of elimination. And if you run out of things to eliminate, sign the doc and go for it, brother. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that's my feeling.
Okay, thank you. So, Tony, anyways, I want to thank you for this interview and for sharing this tremendous knowledge with our listeners.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you very much, and hope to hear and see you soon. Thank you.
Great, thank you.